Welcome to the Battleground Wisconsin. My name is Matt Brusky, and I'm the Deputy Director here at Citizen Action of Wisconsin. And welcome to the post-spring election Battleground Wisconsin. We got Robert Craig, our Executive Director, here to debrief this election. Robert, good to have you.
Good to be with you, Matt. Good to have our producer, Brian, back in the fold.
Yes, Brian Wooldridge back from a much-needed vacation with his family. Good for Brian. And we were off last week, so very happy to be back. And Robert, we got a lot of stuff we're going to talk about. We're going to be joined later in the show by Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski. Very happy to chat with her about all the continued, relentless attacks on not only that office, but just, you know, democracy and what's behind these attacks. The Secretary of State will talk with us a little bit about that. And for folks who don't know, she's was barnstorming the state in support of school referendums this spring, which we want to talk a little bit with her about because we think that speaks well of her and the kind of Secretary of State that she is. We're also going to be joined later by one of our organizers, Kat Claus, to talk about an amazing opportunity that could be out there for everyone to get their homes weatherized and to do a lot of things that can start to address one of the primary things that causes climate change. Robert and Kat Claus will talk later in the show more about that and how we need your help in the next couple of weeks. Robert, got to talk to you about the spring election. We will dive into the local races because let's be honest, that's what was really happening. There was a presidential primary. It was very hard to notice it. The only thing that was of real notice in the presidential primary, and I want to get your thoughts about this, is the role of the uninstructed vote on the Democratic side. And just shout out to the organizers who worked hard behind that. A number of great folks, people that we're really close to, including Rima Hamed and the good folks over at Block, just to get this out and engage this in the debate in a very thoughtful way. And Robert, want to get your comments. This group had hoped to be able to get about 20,000 votes, right? The margin of the previous election to demonstrate to the president how important the issue of a ceasefire in Palestine is, and to try to get him to change and alter his current trajectory. They got double that. So want to get your thoughts on that in relation to the other side. Candidates not even still running. And even organizing an effort like Uninstructed, Haley, and I believe DeSantis was still on there, got significant amount of votes. I mean, Haley got 12%. So, Robert, what is your take? What does this tell us? Obviously, we know these candidates have softness and weaknesses, but your thoughts on any aspect of the presidential primary?
I would say I agree with your characterization, both candidates have softness. I would say that Biden's softness is more correctable than Trump's. Trump is who he is and is off-putting. People say it's moderates. I mean, it's people who have not drunk the entire MAGA Kool-Aid, but they're not necessarily all that moderate. And so where they're going to go, whether they go to Biden or whether they go to third-party candidates and they don't vote, that's very much in play. And that's why the Robert Kennedy independent run is very dangerous in Wisconsin and other battleground states. And he's polling much better than Jill Stein or Ralph Nader ever did in 2016 and 2000. But with Biden, it is about his Gaza policy. And we got to have nuance here. He's moved dramatically. After he clinched the nomination in 2020, he negotiated with the Bernie Sanders side of the party and reached agreements on health care, climate change, a whole lot of social policy like paid family leave and universal K-12 and preschool. Very progressive policies, but he didn't move on foreign policy, and that wasn't part of the negotiations. And we're still stuck in this kind of 1990s foreign policy here, and it's not adapted. And he seems resistant to doing so. Netanyahu is not a partner. He is engaged in something akin to genocide, whether you think it meets the international definition or not, which is a very high definition. So folks know that the general word parlance is different than the international law definition. But the way most people use it, it's genocidal in common conversation. And we are complicit, not just in not condemning it, but in supplying offensive weapons for it, including the kind of weapons that were used to destroy the aid caravan this week, which has caused more outrage. But it just shows they're shooting everything that they can, everything that moves. That's all this shows. And this is what the Palestinians are experiencing as well. There is no targeting of only the alleged terrorists. And I don't think they can be believed when they say, oh, we bombed that school because there was a Hamas militant in it. I don't know. They're going to say that regardless to defend themselves. Their disinformation from their communication people is as bad as it is with local police when there's a police-related killing. In other words, it's made up to defend the IDF in this case or the police at public expense. So he's going to have to move, and Michigan was the huge warning sign with 140,000 people voting uncommitted, but 40,000 in Wisconsin, way more than enough to swing Wisconsin. So hopefully Biden will move because of the politics. The thing to be aware of, though, is that his politics are not simple on the other side. A whole ton of money and resources and support is coming from unreconstructed people who support Israel. And so it is a dilemma for him, but the where he is not a sustainable position. And the left, including me personally and you, Matt, need to keep pushing him to evolve rapidly and to not only demand a ceasefire, but to condition the aid.
Well, definite takeaway from that race. Robert, want to move to some of the important local elections, because that is really what was happening. And in spite of some pretty epically crappy weather across the state, it was bad. I mean, in some places we're talking, 6-8 inches of snow, 25% turnout. Not bad, because it was essentially a local election. The presidential was on fumes and not really generating the energy. And I do want to talk about a couple of things that were important. The referendums across the state, there were, I believe, 85, 90 referendums, including in Milwaukee, which was a major one, because Milwaukee, not only is it our largest city, it's clearly our largest city of folks of color. And it was incredibly damaged by the shared revenue deal and has been for over 15 years. It has not kept up with inflation and funding and had a absolutely existentially important referendum for about $250 million, which by the way, passed. Let's just say that it passed by about 2%. Kudos to the citizens of Milwaukee, who, in spite of never having to pay this. This should have been done through the state in a progressive taxation formula. This is just an indictment that there were 85 referendums of the failure of that package. And that deal was cut by the governor and the legislature. So everybody has a role in addressing this. And so thank you to the voters of Milwaukee for supporting that. But I want to be very clear about how an election like this is won. Thank you to the hundreds of educators, parents, students, allies who went out and knocked doors. Hundreds of people out every weekend in Milwaukee. No candidate. I don't think the president could have generated the amount of people that I saw out on doors for over a month every Saturday under the organizing of the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association. And they deserve tons of credit. Also, there were resources that were put into that. People may not know, but there's a lot of really great leaders, people who've come out and gone on to other things, who funded a lot of that. I'll throw out a name, Dakota Hall. Thank you. I know you are instrumental in supporting this. And this has been a product of years of organizing in Milwaukee by the MTA with the community, the first referendum winning with 70%. And this, I'm going to call it out, and then Robert, I'm coming to you before, and we'll talk more about this after the break. But one of the most pernicious things that went on, and these folks should be shamed, and it's an intersection, is the landlord and renter community. There were letters that were sent out to renters in Milwaukee threatening massive increases in their rent, saying things that, like, quite frankly, were not supportive and disparaging of the idea and the importance of public education. Zolper, I'm talking to you. My kid received your shady, awful letter. Y'all should be ashamed of yourself. Your predatory behavior since COVID, and now to go when at most we should be talking about a little bit of money each month if you were actually do it, to go threaten people. Shame on you all. Robert, your thoughts on the MPS referendum and public school referendums. This was huge. They didn't all pass, but a lot of them did surprisingly well. And I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break. And then, Robert, on the back end, I want you to talk about this, because this for us, public education, it's the backbone of a functioning democracy. If we don't have it, we're kidding ourselves. You're listening to The Battleground Wisconsin, where Citizen Action. Welcome back, Robert. The referendums, your thoughts.
So let's put this in context. The state is grievously underfunded public education, especially in areas with huge concentrated poverty and lots of people of color, because our economic inequality is color-coded in this state and country, that being Milwaukee in largest degree, because it's more expensive. They have a massive number of special needs kids. Why are they special needs? Because that's what poverty does to kids. And so here we have a school deal where the governor gave away power. The governor didn't even have a public fight. The governor could have taken it to the people. He could have had a budget impasse, and it would have done grievous damage to the Republicans, because public education is popular, and it would have harmed their ability to win this next election with fairer maps. And it's his brand.
He's marinating that, Robert.
Bipartisan compromise, whether it is a good compromise or not, and he has to be held accountable for that.
What you just said is 100% right. Marinate in the idea that a city like Milwaukee, under tremendous financial pressure, that its citizens would decide to tax itself at this rate. And by the way, if you don't live here, the campaign, you knew exactly what the cost was, because the chamber spent a ton of money. There was a lot of effort to let everybody know exactly what this was going to cost, which is fine. And the citizens showed they're willing to pay for that. And that is a lesson to every politician out there, how important public education is. And they trifle with it at their peril, especially with these new maps. Talk more about it. Robert, you continue on this.
Right. So now the main culprits, governor was weak, okay, and believes in a political theory about his brand that is not an appropriate way to be governor, in my opinion. What's the office for anyway, other than protecting vulnerable kids and creating a just society, no matter what it does to your brand and your prospects for a third term? But let me just say specifically, this legislature is bought and paid for by the well-off and the well-connected corporate Wisconsin. The Milwaukee Metropolitan Area Chamber Association of Commerce, MMAC, poured in tons of money with misleading ads to undermine this after their bought legislature. It doesn't represent people, it's gerrymandered. It represents them, okay? It represents money and influence. They had both caused this funding shortfall, and then they turned around and tried to go for the jugular and damage at Milwaukee Public Schools by preventing them from using our own property taxes, by lying to people and putting on, Matt pointed out the real estate industry and developer part of it and the landlord part of it.
The chamber set them up. I know the chamber teed those folks up.
And in came the right-wing billionaires, America's prosperity. We don't know how much, it's dark money, was doing a massive field campaign where they were paying $33 an hour to canvassers in the Black community. And they were telling people that all these MPS employees make $140,000 and they want you to pay for it. And remember,
shameful.
This tax
That's
came
shameful.
On top of us having to be the only city in the state that had to do, and the county, only county, that had to do a sales tax to make the shared revenue deal work. So it's a tax upon a tax. They're both regressive. They passed, but they did everything they could not to kill the sales tax, interestingly enough, but to kill Milwaukee public schools. Why? Because they want to replace them with voucher schools.
Well, the other thing, Robert, is the property tax is a tougher thing for some of the, shall we say, wealthy elites and businesses to, shall we say, get out of. The sales tax impacts them less, per se. Anyways, and it's regressive, but we should move on. There are other things that happen around the state. In addition, referendums, there'll be more this fall. Eau Claire is going to referendum this fall. That'll be a huge battle. Look forward to standing with educators and public education there. Folks, do want to talk about some other places. Shout out to some candidates that won in Green Bay City Council. The mayor now has, I believe, a better city council than the one he woke up to Tuesday morning. And so shout out to those folks that won. Some of the folks we endorsed, great. Likewise, there were some, you know, great folks elected that we were behind in Eau Claire. A number of good folks in Wausau. Shout out to Randy Radke, great labor leader. I got elected to the county board overwhelmingly. A number of really good folks. It is worth noting, however, the Democratic, ostensibly, these are nonpartisan seats, but Katie Rosenberg did lose under an immense big spending campaign off the Republican side in support of her opponent. That is certainly one of the, you know, you could say downsides of this election. There was, that's tough. Wausau, for folks who don't know, that is, used to be the home of Dave Obie, Russ Decker, who's a bricklayer, who's the president of the state Senate. They don't have they don't have any Democrats left, in the legislature or in Congress. And it has really changed that community's politics in a way where you can see someone like Rosenberg being so vulnerable to, you know, a massive onslaught from the Republicans. So, Robert, any thoughts you have on any of the other races this spring or anything this spring election?
Well, my understanding is that the Kenosha mayor also went Republican as well. So
correct.
They're still focusing down ballot. So my lesson is, the Democrats are still mixed on whether we're going to put resources down ballot. Citizen Action, we think down ballot is where the action is. It's not only a huge amount of government authority and influence, it's also the farm system for those future legislators, U.S. senators, Congress people, and governors.
So, and of course, on the other downside, we'll just mention it, the amendments on how elections are administered. But that was, I think everyone kind of knew, that was written and rigged to go. Hardly anyone understood that even. So,
again, an attack on democracy. Let's just confuse people. And let's not say why they're going for outside money, including lots of small municipalities, because they're underfunding local governments and elections. And so an amendment that forbid it and then required the legislature to adequately fund elections, that might be a conceivable thing. They don't have any respect for voters in terms of they want to hold power by gerrymandering maps, and they want to get changes to our Constitution by confusing their own voters and every voter.
So before we wrap up this discussion, I do want to say one thing about the time we're now moving into. We've talked about this. I have been ranting about this. I'll use the word. Candidate recruitment is everything right now, folks. Nomination papers go out middle of April. They're back by the end of May. By the end of May, we're going to already know what kind of possible legislature we could have by who actually even runs. And we have a unique opportunity as progressives to be shaping who's in the legislature. There are a number of seats, I've talked about this every damn week, that are going to change. Who the hell is sitting in those seats matters. What kind of progressive, what are their values, right? Who are they aligned with, right? That matters immensely. And it's being determined in a lot of areas of the state where we need to build power. So a lot of times, Robert, I remember this back in the 2000s. Oh, we can't do that because the Democrats from Wausau and from Eau Claire, and they can't make those nonsense, right? That's being determined this week. What kind of Democrats show up, right? Does Tara Johnson win? And thank you, Tara Johnson, for running. We got a gentleman jumping in the 93rd who's a public education advocate, Hell yeah, right? That's what we need, right? Please, if you know people that you think should be running for office, tell them. They need to hear from you. We all have our own inferiority complexes. Nobody tells us enough we can do what we can do, and they need to hear from you. People, even if they don't run, people need to know that they got it within them, and we need to inspire more people to run for these seats who aren't only doctors, lawyers, bankers, you know. That's the only way we change the dynamic. So with that, Robert, we're going to go to break in about a minute, but before we do, and we're going to be joined by Sarah Godlewski. We're so excited about that. Robert, I want you to quickly plug. We got our 40th anniversary event in Wausau next Thursday night. We're back at it now. The elections are over. We really want people to come. Give them 30, you know, give us a 60 seconds to close out why people should come to Wausau to hear a little bit more about not only our 40-year history, but to have a damn good time. The first hour is going to be a lot of food and drinks and socializing.
Well, the adage is true that you will know them by their roots. In other words, the 40-year history of Citizen Action tells us what we need to do now in this challenging crossroads we face on democracy, on climate change, on racial and economic justice in this country. Everything. And so it's a chance to have a little bit of a discussion about that and about all the things this organization has accomplished. Our forebearers, we stand on the shoulders of giants. But in addition, it also will call out the fact that a lot of people have abandoned Wausau. The Democratic Party infrastructure has abandoned Wausau. We have not. And we have a hearty band of progressive activists. And that's what's needed to turn places like Wausau around. So this is also pulling the event way that way with them is a way to encourage them and steel them for the fights ahead. Because even though they lost the mayor's race and Mayor Rosenberg lost to reelect, they can win a state assembly seat. So they can't because the Wausau progressives and Democrats cannot become demoralized.
Absolutely. The 85th is winnable. We intend to fight like hell. Candidate recruitment's going to matter. We got a few weeks, good folks of Wausau, right? It's going to matter. With that, folks, we're going to take a break. We'll see you next Thursday, Whitewater Music Conservatory, I believe it's called. I hear it's an amazing place. Looking forward to it. And again, remind you, we'll be in Eau Claire to close this 40th out April 30th. I already heard we got a DJ for that one. Hell yeah. All right, folks, you're listening to the Battleground Wisconsin. We'll be joined by Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski after this break. Welcome back to the Battleground Wisconsin. We are joined, very happy about this, by Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski. Sarah, welcome.
Hi, Matt. It's really good to be here.
Well, thank you for joining us. And I asked you to come on today for two reasons. One is your office. I don't know, man. Are you the most dangerous person in the state? There continues to be attacks on the Secretary of State's office. And you can talk about it in the really broader attacks on democratic structures. That's one. And then I'm also going to want to get your comment. We've been talking about public education as the backbone of democracy. We were really thrilled to see you barnstorming the state in the spring in support of a lot of these referendums. I'm going to want to get your thoughts on that. So, Sarah, let's start with your office. What is going on? What is the obsession with the Republicans going after the Secretary of State's office?
Well, and it's funny, Matt, as I'm reflecting, I've been in this office now for a year, and walking into this office after I, you know, unexpectedly took the oath of office in my Packer pajamas, which I don't think it can get any more Wisconsin than that. It was like a scene that I would never expect to see in our government. I mean, literally there were boxes of records that needed to be organized and digitized. We had cases of like for families that needed to adopt children or businesses that wanted to finally expand services overseas that had not been yet addressed to, we were still using a seal from 1881 that was older than the Capitol to seal official documents. And what I'm so frustrated about is that when I walked in, it's not because there's not good people that are working for the Secretary of State. It's that the Republicans have basically defunded this office in another power grab at the detriment of Wisconsin. And you want to know why? I mean, one of our roles in the Constitution is to be the keeper of the seal. And let me tell you, it's more than just a super cool logo for the state. You know, the seal is actually what we use to validate government documents so we can ensure that the information you're getting is actually correct. That's why we are written into the Constitution. And why don't they want the Secretary of State? Well, we've seen how bad actors are trying to impersonate government, you know, case in point, the fake electors.
You know, Sarah, I've actually seen the seal, and I don't know if I've ever heard on the airwaves a description of the importance of the seal. I'm guessing the fake elector documents didn't have the actual 1880s seal.
Oh, no, Robert, I think that's one of our best examples, is that the certificate of votes was signed and sealed by the Secretary of State, and the fake electors, their certificate of votes that they turned in to the office was not signed and sealed by the Secretary of State because it's not a government document. It can't be trusted.
Well, Robert, you get the first follow-up to the Secretary.
I know this just, it has key functions now. They've taken away as much as they could constitutionally. And it started before the current legislature and Walker, Tommy Thompson, was stripping it because there was a progressive Doug La Follette that held it for a very long time and had the La Follette name.
Yep.
And so therefore was impregnable in elections. So they just minimized the office and moved his office increasingly from to less and less good areas until finally up in the basement of the Capitol. So the dungeon. So what would be your vision of what this office should be? Just thinking about, I mean, this is, conservatives don't actually think about these things. What is its intent in the Constitution and what would restore it to its role? It was supposed to be a major elected check and balance in government.
Yeah, and Robert, just to maybe further illustrate exactly your point, is that we saw some of the most retaliatory actions against Doug after Act 10, when he refused to sign Act 10. So then immediately after Act 10, they not only stripped him from his office that has to be accessible to the public and moved him in the basement, which, Robert, we like to call the garden level. You know, we're trying to rebrand over here.
Nice.
But put him in the basement. And then they got rid of key roles like a lawyer, an accountant, a team of people that actually manage these international cases that we are the only office that can do. So let's, like, it was a very political, retaliatory place in how we got here. But to, like, circle back to, you know, your question about what the Secretary of State's office should be doing. I mean, look, like, this is an office that is an elected office that has responsibilities and accountabilities to the people of Wisconsin. And I think that is, whether it's the work that, you know, something that I found out that my colleagues do across the state that I had no idea, was they're doing work to advocate for, you know, whether it's international relationships or for trade because of our relationship with the State Department. And something we've been talking about is when we're looking at, for example, trade partnerships, how are they supporting unions? Like, we want to be working with, like, pro-union companies as an example. And so I think there's some roles there that we have been seeing. You know, another piece that I've been talking about is I do think this office needs to continue to be an advocate for strengthening and defending democracy. You know, something that when I got into this office, I started meeting with clerks because we have roles and responsibilities with clerks. We're supposed to be authenticating clerk seals and signatures, for example. And they are overstaffed. They are, you know, literally attacked for the work that they do. We're losing clerks. We need to be doing what we can to promote, to get more young people into these professions. To even, like, the, you know, we are a keeper of fair and accurate records. Well, Matt and Robert, you guys know that people don't want us to always remember the past. They want to rewrite history differently. And one of the things that we've got to make sure is we've got to be the truth tellers of history and, you know, make sure we're talking about that.
So let me ask you the big political question. I know that people don't realize there's a National Association of State Secretaries of State.
Yeah.
So I assume you've gone to those meetings. So you'd know the number, a huge percentage of states, the Secretary of State actually runs elections. What do you think the pros and cons are of having an elected official accountable administer elections? I know it's not always been a panacea, but what is your take on that?
Yeah, so there are, I believe, less than 10 states that do not have their Secretary of State run elections. And from my conversations, I think some of the differentiators is like, look, when you have a Secretary of State that runs elections, there's accountability built into a system because folks can vote for that individual. And in states where we saw fake electors, like in Michigan and in Nevada and Arizona and in Georgia and in Pennsylvania, this was a combination of Democratic secretaries of state and also Republican secretaries of state. They stood up to the fake electors. You know, the Republican secretary of state of Georgia, he stood up to the fake electors. The, you know, Republican secretary of state in Pennsylvania, he stood up to the fake electors. So there is, I think, a built-in level of accountability. But with that being said, you know, one of the things at Wisconsin, we had the Government Accountability Board, which was comprised of these judges that were calling balls and strikes on elections that understood election law. And I think it was a really innovative way of Wisconsin to lead. But then Scott Walker didn't like the Government Accountability Board because it was holding elected officials accountable for campaign finance reform. And then he made the Wisconsin Election Commission, which, you know, we now have a fake elector who literally said that, you know, those documents, those voting documents that we sent the Secretary of State and Congress, like, just look the other way. Don't, you know, don't count those documents. Like, I changed my mind, you know, even though I was trying to overturn the will of the people back in December of 2020, that was probably wrong. And that guy is literally on the Election Commission still today. Where's the accountability there?
Well, I like what you had to say about the sort of the premise of the role of the Secretary of State in safeguards around democracy. I think that that's important in centering that. I'd like to slightly go back to the topic I brought in about public education, because we've talked immensely before you came on about its critical role in any functioning democracy and just how impressed we were at the voters speaking loudly and clearly across the state that they're willing to pay money for public education. And politicians better listen. It is not acceptable to come back with a shared revenue deal like the one that was signed. That is unacceptable, and it does not reflect the values of the people of the state. And that message was sent loud and clear. Want to get your thoughts, because you were going all around the state supporting referendums beforehand, including here in Milwaukee very publicly. I think you were even sick the day you were here speaking on behalf of public education. So I just want to get your thoughts before you go on that and just the central role of schools in our public system in this great state.
Well, Matt, I'm just infuriated that we're even here in the first place, because Wisconsin has always had a strong foundation in public education. I mean, it's written into the Constitution. I mean, I chair the Common School Fund, which ensures funding for public schools. But yet the only tool that now local communities have, because the legislature has literally stifled them from resources, was these referendums. And if we don't have good public schools, I mean, how do we expect to build strong communities? Because it's about our future. But it's also about retaining teachers, because we're losing them to Minnesota in Illinois, where they're getting better benefits or they have better class sizes. Do you think businesses don't look at public schools before they decide where to go or if Wisconsin is a good place? It's absolutely a critical resource. So it's an economic driver for the state. And so it's just been really frustrating that they've almost treated public education, the Republican legislature, as this afterthought, when it is center to the values of Wisconsin all the way back to 1848.
Well, thank you. Thank you for everything you did this spring election, getting out and using your office in your role as a leader to lead on a critical issue like public education values. It's one of the reasons we feel so close to you, have always really liked and support your work, is that you've always, no matter what you've been running for or when you're in the office, how do I use my office to speak to the broader issues that matter? And so thank you for doing that. We're really glad you took the time to talk with us today.
Well, thanks for everything that you guys do. And hopefully I'll see you at a 40th anniversary party.
Hey, well, thanks. You know, I hear you live in the General Eau Claire area and are a member of the co-op. So we might see you. Just folks, if you want another enticement why you should go to the Eau Claire event, come say hi to Sarah.
Thank you again.
We really appreciate you. Thank you for everything you've been doing over the years and will continue to do.
Yes. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
With that, folks, we're going to take a break. You're listening to The Battleground Wisconsin, and you can find us at citizenactionwi.org. Welcome back to The Battleground Wisconsin. Again, we're Citizen Action. We're all over the socials. Please follow us on Twitter, Facebook. I guess it's X now, whatever. Even if you're still there, we're sort of still there. Folks, we are really happy to have our second guest. We want to, first of all, thank Secretary of State Gudlewski for joining us. But we have our new, here at Citizen Action, I think everybody knows, we do immense amount of work on climate. And we're fortunate to have our climate coordinator with us, Kat Claus. Kat, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Matt. I am excited to be here this morning.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you because we have spent so much time talking about what amazing things were done a few years back through the Inflation Reduction Act and a number of other bills that passed that made a massive investment, right, in climate. And here we are. Here is an opportunity that you're here to talk, and I'm going to kick it to you and Robert to drive this discussion, but there is an opportunity for resources for people to greatly update and weatherize their homes and do things that you're here to talk about. Robert, I'm going to kick it to you because I want you to ask the questions because you know so much better and been working on this with Kat. But Robert, please set the stage, ask the questions about this really critical issue.
So stage setting, then I will turn to our technical expert here, Kat. So part of the challenge of democracy is government, as it's matured in the United States and other advanced democracies, has become extremely complicated. So it's not understandable to people. And so how are they going to benefit from things government does do that are good? And how are they going to hold people accountable for the good and the bad, right? And so let me set the stage here. President Biden had to fight really hard to pass the Inflation Reduction Act. Everyone remembers all the drama with Joe Manchin and the filibuster and all of that. And of course, no Republican support whatsoever, despite the climate crisis and the economic benefits of doing so. So it passed after a long, dramatic thing very few people could follow fully, except those who really follow this stuff closely. What people don't realize is the money moves in all sorts of complicated kind of tributaries and that are even less understood than the congressional process. And so there's these huge tax credits, both tax credits and rebates. That means you get them regardless of whether you owe enough taxes to make up their amount, just like an earned income tax credit. And what people don't realize is they're designed by each state. So in Wisconsin, these critical investments that could unlock energy efficiency and much lower energy bills for low-income people, people of color, and everyone, middle-class people as well, that right now Focus on Energy, a nonprofit that is regulated by the Public Service Commission, the regulator of utilities, is deciding how to implement these tax credits and tax rebates in Wisconsin. And so the problem we have is that low-income homeowners, and especially Black folks in Milwaukee, get it both ways. They have the lowest incomes. They've been redlined into the oldest housing stock that's at least energy efficient. And that's why their energy burden, that is the percentage of income they could pay for heat and light, can be 6, 10, 15, even 20% of income, which is unaffordable. You can't do that and afford food, pay rent, do all the other basics. And so, but utilities are fossil fuel companies, and they have denied in Wisconsin, because they've gotten away with it, not in other states like Illinois to the south, low-income people the financial way to finance it, because it pays for itself. It does pay for itself because it saves energy. If you get a lot of energy efficiency upgrades and retrofitting of older homes and apartments, it pays for itself if you can finance it. Utilities do that in Illinois. They don't in Wisconsin because no one's made them. And so they're part of the structural racism. This is an end around. And what's exciting, and here's what Kat's going to explain, is Focus on Energy is deciding on its final regulations. There's another 2 weeks or so for the comment period. It just started. It's a very brief comment, people, that virtually no one knows about. Again, a weakness of government. And there's an option, that the first option, option A, that would actually fully pay for it for low-income homeowners, so there's no barrier, because they have no discretionary income. They're just trying to afford rent, food, everything else. They do not have a couple thousand dollars to throw in, even if it gets them huge benefit and lowers energy bills. So Kat, can you tell us now, we're now down to the level that Kat excels in, not that she doesn't in the others, but I'm saying she does more than others in this, and what they're proposing and how we will decide, average people, whether that occurs or not in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, thank you, Robert. And as you mentioned, I am so excited about the possibility of this, about what this future could mean. And so why I'm excited about this is because imagine a Wisconsin where every Wisconsinite has a house that stays warm in the winter, cool in the summer, and they're also not spending hundreds on energy bills every month. The Inflation Reduction Act and Focus on Energy with the PSC is helping make that possible with some of these rebates that they are considering and up for voting for comment. We have some really great opportunities here to affect policy for the next decade. We're talking $74 million. And as you mentioned, it's in charge of by the PSC, the Public Service Commission, who is three people who make decisions that impact every Wisconsin. And these people aren't elected, they're appointed. And the Public Service Commission have been put in charge of Focus on Energy to give out that Inflation Reduction Act money. And one of the options we have is we can make it where low-income Wisconsinites can get thousands of work done to their home for free. This could include things like attic insulation, an energy-efficient furnace, a smart thermostat, so many other improvements. And if these proposals pass by Focus on Energies, these upgrades could be done at no cost to certain low or moderate-income homeowners.
Kat,
however,
did I hear that? I just want to make sure I heard that right. Did you say free, no cost? I think you said that.
Free, no cost to certain low-income homeowners if they meet all of the requirements.
Amazing.
So this is revolutionary. I am so very excited about this. This is so near and dear to my heart, if you can't hear that. And the goal of the program is 20% energy reduction. And I just mentioned that because that means that if you reduce your energy bill or have less of energy use, that means less money spent on heating, cooling, and gas. So outside of all these great upgrades that could be done for free, fully covered to homeowners, they're going to be saving big money on bills.
You know, Kat, you're someone who's deeply involved in what's going on here in Milwaukee, where they're moving ahead on a climate plan. I know Milwaukee Public Schools is doing a lot of stuff. It's my understanding that this very area, our homes and residential, is a major part of what it would take to deal with the climate here in Milwaukee in particular, but in other cities, that our residential homes is a major part of our carbon emissions. And this is actually not only great for people to be able to do it for free, and yes, you said free, it is critical to meeting our global climate needs. Is that correct? I mean, am I off base here?
No, it is absolutely critical. And there's been subsidies and things like that for private businesses and government to do this work. But this is really the first time on this scale that we're seeing this done for homeowners, for our homes, for our residences. And it also helps with, as you mentioned, the Milwaukee County Climate and Equity Action Plan. There's parts in there about jobs. And I don't know if a lot of people realize that all this funding is going to be an immense boom for our apprenticeships, trades, and union programs. Because not only is this going to pay people to get upgrades to their homes that they need and help with climate work, this is going to bring self-supporting wage jobs growth here across the state.
So I hope you tried really hard, Kat. I hope everyone hung with you on that. But you don't have to recall all of that. You just have to take certain action. Remember, we don't just do public education, though that's important. It's for people to be at the center of governing. and influencing what happens. And so it doesn't take a whole ton of comments to influence the Public Service Commission. This is not a congressperson voting on an abortion bill and having call after call come in. Quite the contrary. And that's even at local level of government, city council, state legislature, that's true, but even more because so few know about this. I don't know if there have any articles about this. Maybe I haven't seen one. So there's media's sleep at the wheel, what's left of it. And so, but we're media, this is new media. So Battleground Wisconsin is breaking this to you probably. So what do people do to get their voice heard and make this happen, to make sure this is the most progressive, equitable version of President Biden's historic climate investments?
Yeah, thank you, Robert. And so Citizen Action is working on that very thing. We are working on a petition that we will send to the Public Service Commission, PSC, who is voting on this. And we are working with Green Homeowners United to collect at least 100 signatures in favor of the more progressive option, which includes expanding it so though low-income and moderate-low-income individuals can take advantage of these funds and get it 100% covered, and also making them backdated. So that means that people who were ambitious and started the work can get repayment just like all others. And so, as you mentioned, we have basically 2 weeks to get a comment. That is a short turnaround time. So PSD is voting on April 16th. Citizen Action and Green Homeowners United have a petition that we are running until April 15th with a goal of 100 signatures in support of those two proposals.
And folks, we will have a link right on the website with the podcast where you can sign. And we really want you to, you know, do that. And please share it with others. Let others know. As Robert and Kat mentioned, this is not getting a lot of publicity. We would like to bring a little bit of light to it. Mm-hmm. Kat, I want to thank you for, first of all, for coming to Citizen Action and helping with this critically important work. Your level of detail and policy expertise and digging into all this stuff is critically important. So thank you for that. But thank you for coming on today and talking to us. I want to give you any final thoughts or any final things that you want to leave for our listeners about this important opportunity.
Yeah, I'm particularly excited about this and this opportunity to share our feedback with the PSC because there's only currently 4 comments on something that includes $74 million, 10 years of impact, and also just is so important for our homeowners. But this doesn't just help our homeowners, it helps our economy, our unions, and the environment.
Well, thank you so much, Kat. Really appreciate it. Folks, that's it. The show's over. We're out of time. We want to thank not only Kat Claus for joining us and educating us all. Please do exactly what she said. Go sign that petition, show your support. And of course, we want to thank Sarah Godlewski, Secretary of State, for joining us and continuing to educate us about not only what that office does, but the continued attacks on it and our broader democracy here in Wisconsin. Folks, I want to thank our producer, Brian Wooldridge. We can't do this show every week without him. And we thank him very much. We love that guy. Makes this show happen every week. You should too. Folks, we'll see you next week here at the Battleground, Wisconsin.